This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half.
Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today. Hello and welcome to Happier, a podcast about how to be happier. This week, we'll talk about why you might imitate a spiritual master, and we'll talk to Glennon Doyle about her number one best-selling new memoir, Untamed. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature. I'm in New York City, and joining me today from LA, from a hotel room in the desert, is my sister, Elizabeth Kraft.
That's me, Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA. But today, Gretch, I'm in Desert Hot Springs. I just needed to get away for a couple of days. So
excellent.
Communing with nature.
Yes. Well, I'm sure that while you're away, you're doing some reading. And for listeners who want to do some reading, remember our next book club choice is Yod Jesse's wonderful, unforgettable novel, Transcendent Kingdom. So get to reading and send us your questions, observations, insights, because we will be talking to her in a few weeks.
Yes. And then, Gretchen, we wanted to share this from Linda. She was responding to our discussion about getting out of your storage unit.
Yeah.
She said, I've got a huge garage and a smaller one. Both were crammed with junk. I'd like to sell the house in a few years and have been working hard on minimizing the stuff I own. None of the junk in the garage has been used in years. I thought about having a rummage sale, but the time and work involved is not worth the few $100s that I would make. Similarly, nothing was worth selling individually on Facebook Marketplace or something similar. My solution to getting out of my storage units was to put everything by the road. A few people stopped by, but then one guy took everything. He came back with a trailer the next day for more. I feel much lighter. You can move around in the garages, and hopefully other people are benefiting from my unwanted stuff.
Well, see, I love this because clearly this guy had a vision for it. Like,
yes.
You know, if you're going to come back with a trailer.
Yes.
And so she put that stuff out into the world where someone can get the benefit of it.
Yes. And it's true. Sometimes a rummage sale is great, but sometimes it's just a lot of work for like not a lot of gain.
Right. And you get that feeling of having the space cleared out because she wants to move. And now she has kind of that freedom from getting out of a storage unit because now it's not something that's your responsibility anymore. Whether
yes.
you're paying for it or not, you have to sort of monitor it and take care of it. So
yes.
Great
so,
thing.
So nice job, Linda.
Yes. So this week, our Try This at Home suggestion is to imitate a spiritual master. And we talked about this idea way back in episode 16, but we're bringing it up again right now because it seems like a good Try This at Home for the moment. These are hard times, and drawing on our spiritual fortitude will help us meet the challenges of the moment. Taking time to think about transcendent matters and admirable figures is something that can be kind of a solace and a help when times are tough.
So, Gretch, what does it mean to imitate a spiritual master?
Well, this is a really creative, interesting exercise. So first, to imitate a spiritual master, you have to identify the person. Who is your spiritual master? And that could be a person from history. That could be a person you know. That could be anyone who you feel like represents ideals for you. Then you have to learn about what they stand for, maybe their life, you know, whether that's by reading books or watching documentaries or listening to interviews or hanging around them if you happen to know your spiritual master. And then you have to figure out, well, how would you imitate your spiritual master in your own life? Because often our spiritual masters don't have lives that are very similar to ours. You know, you have to think about it. And maybe it's somebody from your tradition. Maybe it's someone from outside your tradition. Or maybe it's somebody who doesn't even seem like a traditional choice. It's just like somebody who speaks to you for whatever reason. And that's a really interesting thing to discover.
So Gretchen, who is your spiritual master?
So I have many, many spiritual masters, like Winston Churchill, Samuel Johnson, Julia Child, Ben Franklin. But I first got the idea, and I think my most important spiritual master is St. Thérèse of Lisieux. And again, I am not Catholic, and she is like a doctor of the church. So she comes from outside my tradition. But I read her spiritual memoir called Story of a Soul, and it was like I just became instantly so fascinated and occupied with thoughts of St. Thérèse. I have shelves and shelves of biographies of her. I've reread Story of a Soul many, many times. I was just thinking, oh, I need to reread it now. Just, she speaks to me for whatever reason. That's the thing about a spiritual master. For some reason, this is a person who speaks to you, and she speaks to me with her talk about the little way and her talk about love, and it just really resonates with me. How about you, Elizabeth? Who is your spiritual master?
Okay. When we talked about this before, my spiritual master was Barbara Walters, and she still is.
See, kind of an untraditional spiritual master, but there she is.
Yes. So she's still a spiritual master, but I've picked a couple of new spiritual masters for this particular time. And I think everyone will relate to these people. One is Michelle Obama. And the other is Dr. Fauci.
And what is it about them that make them spiritual masters for you?
Well, you know what it is? It's that both of them just keep going and keep trying to sort of help people no matter what is thrown their way. You know, both of them have been criticized a lot, in my opinion, very unfairly. Both of them just calmly, rationally keep moving forward. They persist forward. And I feel like the reason I picked them is because I'm someone who gets the sort of running around like a chicken with my head cut off thing very easily. You know, I get rattled, I get defeated. I just say, forget it. This is ridiculous. You know, it's too hard. And I kind of panic. And I feel like they never panic. Or if they do, you certainly don't see it.
So you feel like their sort of indefatigability and unflappability is something that you look to emulate yourself.
Yes. I should absolutely, in a moment, say, what would Michelle Obama or Dr. Fauci do right now? And emulate that as opposed to what I usually do.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that's really interesting about this exercise and why, in a way, it's a know yourself better question is because people would pick different spiritual masters. And I think you're attracted to your spiritual master. Probably it's like research is me search. Like I, you know, Dolly Parton kind of crept up on me. Obviously, she is a spiritual master for me because I write about her and think about her all the time. And I think for me, it's Dolly Parton's, it's her sense of herself. And she has this unwavering vision for what she wants for herself and who she is. And she just, and what she wants to put into the world and the good she wants to do in the world. She seems like a really good person, but also a person who is like, has supreme command of herself and her public presentation in a way that I just so admire. But it took me a while to realize, why am I watching interview after interview after interview of Dolly Parton? It's like, oh, she has turned into my spiritual master.
Yes. And she, again, doesn't let people sort of sidetrack her. She moves forward with what she wants to do.
No, she, I remember reading in one of her biographies, which I read, like she fired her whole team at one point because she wanted to start Dollywood. And they were like, well, we don't think you can pull it off. And she's like, okay, well, then I need to find people who believe in my vision. And it's just like, okay, you know, this is where I'm going. Now, and Elizabeth, don't you think in this time when there's so much focus on racial justice, I think that many people are choosing spiritual masters who reflect those values. And whether that's somebody from the past, like Martin Luther King Jr. or someone, I remember when I was reading Just Mercy with Bryan Stevenson, I was thinking like, what an admirable person. I really want to learn more about him. I want to understand where he's coming from and what more he has to say. And so I think that is a way to go deeper into our values.
Absolutely. And when you learn about someone important in the world, it helps you learn about yourself, and that helps you move forward in the world the way you want to move forward.
Right, right, by identifying your values. So let us know if you do tread this at home and how choosing a spiritual master works for you, and who is your spiritual master.
Yes.
It is so fascinating to hear about people's spiritual masters. I will post a link to some of the little happiers and blog posts that I have done about St. Therese and Dolly Parton and Samuel Johnson. I wrote a whole book about Winston Churchill. So let us know on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Drop us an email at podcast@gretchenrubin.com. Or as always, you can go to happiercast.com/294. This is episode 294, so you can get everything related to this episode.
Coming up, we've got another in our series of household happiness hacks. But first, this break.
We all know that our life and our health can be improved when we eat nourishing, healthy meals, but it can be hard to maintain. With Sunbasket Meal Kits, it's easy because they take care of the details. Sunbasket offers 18 chef-crafted, dietitian-approved recipes each week with options like Mediterranean, carb-conscious, vegetarian, and keto-friendly. The recipes are quick and easy to follow, and you can enjoy a meal full of organic produce and clean ingredients that's ready in 30 minutes or less.
Try mouthwatering Sunbasket dishes like salmon burgers with lemon dill mayo and seared squash, or steaks with chimichurri and harissa roasted sweet potatoes. My son Jack loves salmon, and he loves the Sunbasket salmon burgers. Go to sunbasket.com/happier today to get $45 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/happier to get $45 off your first box plus free shipping. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, Gretch, it is time for this week's happiness hack. We're doing a short series on what we call household gadgets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very practical tips to make your house more livable.
Yes.
And this one comes from Beth. She says, "When my oldest son started crawling, I was consumed with the fear of him falling down the basement stairs because we forgot to close the door. My husband had the idea to attach an adjustable hold open door closer to the basement door, causing it to automatically shut when we let go. It costs just $15 and is an easy way to gain some peace of mind when chasing after little ones."
So I always thought you just had to accept your fate when it came to a door. Some doors close, some doors stay open. What are you going to do? So it turns out, now confusingly, these things are called hold open door closers, which I just cannot wrap my mind around it. But you can find these things. They are a household gadget that can make sure that a door closes automatically. And you can imagine with pets, I mean, there's many reasons why there are doors that you would want to close automatically.
Yes. So this is a really good idea. I'm on a one-story house. I don't worry about basement stairs. But for those who do.
But when we were growing up.
Yes.
We had some serious basement stairs.
Yes.
And it was a scary basement there for a while, too. You didn't want to fall into the basement.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And today's interview is with Glennon Doyle. We are very excited to be talking to Glennon Doyle. She is the mega best-selling author of the books Carry On Warrior, Love Warrior, and most recently, her number one New York Times bestseller, Untamed. And here's the official description of Untamed. "For many years, Glennon Doyle denied her own discontent. Then, while speaking at a conference, she looked at a woman across the room and fell instantly in love. Three words flooded her mind: There she is. At first, Glennon assumed these words came to her from on high, but she soon realized that they had come to her from within. This was her own voice, the one she had buried beneath decades of numbing addictions, cultural conditioning, and institutional allegiances. Glennon decided to quit abandoning herself and instead to abandon the world's expectations of her. Untamed is the story of navigating divorce, forming a new blended family, and discovering that the brokenness or wholeness of a family depends not on its structure, but on each member's ability to bring her full self to the table.
She's also founder and president of Together Rising, an all-women-led nonprofit organization that supports women, families, and children in crisis.
We are so excited to be talking to her today through the magic of technology, of course. Hello, Glennon.
Hello.
Hey.
Glennon, first tell us, where are you and how are you handling the pandemic?
Yes. I'm in Naples and I'm handling it poorly. No, I mean, I don't know. How do you even answer that question now? I feel differently used to say every week, and now it feels like I feel differently every hour. I'm usually pretty hopeful and full of energy in the morning, and then by the evening, I get really sad, and I miss my mom, and I miss my people, and so I'm everything.
Yeah,
I'm everything.
That's probably what most of us are.
Yeah, changes day to day. So, Glennon, with this book, the title of it is Untamed, which is like such a powerful word and image. And then you start with the scene at the zoo. Did you know from the first minute that was going to be sort of the title and a central theme, or did you figure it out after you had written the book?
Well, the title was the absolute last.
Ooh, really? Because it seems so
inevitable.
Inevitable.
I know.
Exactly.
I struggle with titles. I struggle with titles. And often I'm writing the book for so long before I even know what it's about.
Mm. I know what you mean.
You know, I mean, I knew that I wanted to write about this discontent or this caged feeling that I felt inside of every structure that I was in, whether it was religion or gender or sexuality or even, you know, politics, all of it, that I just felt like we're all more than the categories we've been put into. And I was, when I saw, you know, as writers, we're always looking for something on the outside that we can point to get people to understand what we're feeling on the inside.
Oh, yeah.
That's like the basis of writing and metaphor.
Yeah.
It drives my kids crazy with all of the metaphors I use every day. They're like, Mom, it's just a table. It's just a table, Mom. But when I saw that cheetah that was made for wide open spaces and was being forced to live this life of captivity, but you could still see her wildness, even though all she'd ever known was captivity. You could see that she still knew that she was meant for more. And when I saw that, I thought, that's it.
And you start with describing that cheetah, and it really does set up like every single line of the book kind of goes back to that.
I'm so glad, because that was tricky. I mean, as you all know, you know, when you're creating these things, I mean, nobody, my editor, all of them were like, you're going to start with a cheetah? And it was a big question. Like, are people going to get it? Uh-huh. That was the question over, are people going to get it? And so it's so amazing now to see, of course they get it.
They get it.
Well, one quotation that really stuck out for us and seemed to sum up what you write about in all three of your books is, being bad had almost killed me, but so had being good. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, it's interesting when you think about, how do we live a life that is ours? You know, how do we know that the things that we want and our personalities and like our dreams, how do we know they're from us and they're not all just planted from the day we're born through our conditioning, right? And when I think about the idea of conformity or rebellion, I think so many of my friends have, and I did for a lot of time in my life, I thought that rebellion was freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the fact that I am not, because that's how I lived the first half of my life, right? I'm not doing anything you tell me to do. I'm not even going to be mentally healthy. Thank you. I'm going to do everything opposite of what culture tells me to do. And then I got so sick, right? As tends to happen. And I found that I was pregnant when I had been lost to addiction for so long. And then I just immediately thought, oh, okay, well, that didn't work. Rebelling against everything didn't work. So now I'm going to be good.
Mm.
this is my last chance to be good. So I'm going to be good. I'm just going to look at the world and find out what exactly makes like a good mom and a good wife and a good Christian and a good friend and a good teacher. I gooded myself to death, right? Mm. And so in coming out of that, I think I was talking to Liz Gilbert, and I was quoting to her John Steinbeck. I said something like, you know, now that we are done being perfect, we can be good.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I think that's in the book. Yeah.
And she said, no, I'm too tired. I'm too tired of being good. How about now? How about now that we're done being good, we can be free. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started thinking, wait, good is a cage. Okay. Conformity to what culture tells us is a cage, but so is rebellion. Mm-hmm. Because rebellion is still acting in opposition of what they told you to do. It's not creative. It's not creating anything from scratch. It's either doing what they said or doing the opposite, still is living in reaction of what they have told you is the thing to do, right?
Yeah. John Gardner has this great line where he said, every time you break the law, you pay. And every time you obey the law, you pay.
That's it. That's it, right? So how is there this third way? I mean, my favorite people in the world are the people that figure out the third way, right? So if it's not freedom to do what they say, and it's not freedom to do the opposite of what they say, then what is freedom? It's figuring out what you say.
Yes, yes. That is the hardest thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, and this brings us to this amazing passage that we want you to read. You set up this hilarious story where, you know, you talk to your mom every day and you're very, very close. And one night you just say to her, I'm getting my hair cut tomorrow. I think I'm thinking about getting bangs. And she calls you at 6 a.m. in the morning, like, I'm sorry to call so early, but I just couldn't sleep. I was thinking about the bangs. I think you're really going to regret it. And I just have to stop you. Before you go, and which is wonderful, which is loving,
which is codependent.
Yeah, but it makes you stop and pause and sort of have a realization. So, would you read from the page about what your line of thinking, how it evolved from the conversation about the bangs?
Yeah. So I say, if my decision to get bangs had kept my mother up all night, you can imagine her reaction to my decision to divorce my husband and marry a woman. I could hear her fear in every question and in the long silences between her questions. But what about the kids? What will their classmates say? The world can be so cruel. She was shaken, and that started to shake me. That day she told me not to get bangs, I didn't. My mother loves me very, very well, so I've always trusted her to know what was right for me. It's not the cruel criticism from folks who hate us that scares us away from our knowing. It's the quiet concern of those who love us. My mom's fear started to pull me away from my knowing. I lost my peace. I became defensive and angry. I spent weeks on the phone with her, explaining myself, trying to convince her that I knew what I was doing and that it would all be okay. One night I was talking to my sister, working myself up, replaying to her my most recent conversation with my mom. My sister interrupted me and said, Glennon, why are you so defensive? Defensiveness is for people who are afraid that what they can have can be taken from them. But you're a grown-ass woman. You can have what you want. No one can take this from you, not even mom. This is yours, Glennon. Abby is yours. We hung up and I thought, my mother loves me. And she disagrees with me about what is best for me. I am going to have to decide who I trust more, my mother or myself. For the first time in my life, I decided to trust myself, even though that meant moving in direct opposition to my parents. I decided to please myself instead of my parents. I decided to become responsible for my own life, my own joy, my own family. And I decided to do it with love. That is when I became an adult.
Oh, I love that because I think that's so true that sometimes the hardest thing is the quiet concern of the people who love us most, who want to protect us from hurt and disappointment and fear, and it can pull us away. And I just thought that's such a beautiful example of that.
It gives me chills. I mean, even when we were growing ivy on our house, our mom was concerned it would ruin the walls. And it took me a year to say, you know what? I want ivy on my house and I don't care. You know, it's you. They love you and they want what's best. And it is really hard to separate.
Yeah. Listen, I know women. I know people who are the fiercest, most independent activists who are screaming on the, you know, yeah. who are screaming behind podiums, freedom for all, freedom for all. And then they are just scared to death of their moms, of yeah. disappointing their moms. Like, this is the final frontier.
Right? But then it's also a good reminder on the other side. Like, I don't know best. Others have to make their own decisions. Yes. And like, I feel so confident that I know about the bangs or about yes. the marriage or whatever.
Well, I think Cookie. That with my daughter, I mean, one of the most important things I've ever said to her, and I try to remind her as often as possible, she came home one day and she said, Chase, her older brother, Chase wants me to do all these clubs in high school that he did, and I don't want to do them. And I said, well, don't do them. So what? Mm. And she said, well, I don't want to disappoint him. Mm. And I said, honey, your job throughout your entire life is to disappoint as many people as it takes so that you never disappoint yourself. Mm. And she said, even you? And I said, and I said, especially me. Right? Like yeah. our moms, our parents have these plans for us, these expectations, and they are rooted in their expectations and in their generation and in their time, right? And so it's almost like we don't become responsible, unique individuals until we become disobedient children, right? Until we figure out that the best way to honor our parents is to trust the people they raised, which is ourselves.
Right. So, yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So, Glennon, I wanted to ask you, I have a friend who's a young television writer. I'm a TV writer. And she was so intimidated at work because it's, you know, it's an intimidating environment. And then she read Untamed. And she said, now, like, I just have to be bold and I want to be bold. And it really changed her approach to being at work. It feels to me like you really found your boldness through writing. As soon as you started to write, it just changed everything. Mm-hmm. But what's your advice for someone who wants to be bold but doesn't have that particular outlet? How can mm-hmm. we start to do this, mm-hmm. you know, to be ourselves?
Well, I mean, that's what I would go to is what you just said, that it's to me being untamed, which is really just returning to who we were before the world told us who to be, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, who are we underneath all of this social conditioning? It is not necessarily to me always about being bold. Mm. It's about being yourself. So I have two daughters, okay? One is her very being since she was very young is just very cautious and quiet. Mm-hmm. She's a thinker. She's an introvert. She's freaking brilliant. She's an observer. She's so when she starts to be tamed is when people tell her, oh, come on, you know, be different than you are. It's what brave means is being afraid and doing it anyway. That's horseshit, by the way. Yeah. Like, that's not what being brave means. Brave means honoring who you are at your deepest core. Right. Mm. And so and then Emma, my youngest, oh my God, she's our typical, when we say wild, like think of her mm-hmm. that she's just loud and she's out there and she's always wearing something and saying something and doing something crazy. That's her untamed self. Mm-hmm. So when she gets tamed is when people tell her to reel it in, to not be so bold, to not be whatever. But what I do fear is that that the message we're going to take is like what women need to do is women just need to be louder and like, if that's who women are, that's who right. That's what they should be, right? But that's just another cage if we're right. going to create that idea, right? Who women should be is exactly who they are at their truest selves. And if their truest selves is if they feel most in their power when they are observant and quiet, that is a superpower, right? That's actually more who I am in my everyday life. And if who they are is loud and opinionated and out there, then that's who they should be. But there is room for all personalities. And the last thing that feminism wants to do is create another cage that all women have to stay inside of to be successful and powerful.
Now, Glennon, before we let you go, we always ask every guest if they have a tried this at home tip, something concrete and manageable that people can try in their own day starting tomorrow. So do you have any suggestions for our listeners?
Okay, so I was thinking about this morning because I know you, this is a thing. Okay, so this is what I've been doing lately. So I tend towards dramatic thinking, which means that at least once in the day, I think I need like a new personality and a new job, and, like, a new religion and a new city and a new family. And you know, I just, everything is just terrible. And then what I usually need is like a glass of water. Okay. Like that. It's the little things that reel me in, not the big thing. So, however, Gretchen, I cannot drink water. Like I'm addicted to coffee. I go, I go to coffee. So, and I just.
Elizabeth and I drink so much coffee.
Yeah. You do.
You can come with us, Elizabeth? And we'll drink pots and pots of coffee.
It just never ends. And then I look at the coffee and I think, well, I used a lot of water for this. So certainly this counts for my water intake, right? So this is what I started to do. Actually, Abby got me this. So I have this massive thermos.
I'm going to post a picture of this online for people who want to see it.
It's like a jug.
It looks like a keg. It looks like a small keg.
Yeah. But it's a barrel. It's kind of a barrel.
Yeah. And then it has little slots. It says 8 a.m., 10 a.m. And you're supposed to drink as much as the time says. And then the cool thing is that it's so heavy and terrible to carry around. So you want to drink it so that you don't have to keep carrying it around because it feels like a punishment. And I'm just telling you that it's weird, but I have never drank so much water. I feel like it's an accomplishment. There, you know, there's not much we can get accomplished in quarantine, in pandemic life. This is something that I can crush every day.
Every day. Excellent. Nice. Excellent. Well, I'm going to post a picture of it because it is really quite an extraordinary
It's ridiculous.
This is your average water bottle. Yes.
Right.
Glennon, thank you so much. It was so fun to talk to you.
Well, sister, I love you too. I love that you're doing this amazing sister work in the world. That's, you know, my sister and I do everything together.
We love you and your sister again.
Yeah.
Thanks for everything that you do. I hope to meet you in person one day.
Yes, one of these days.
Coming up, I give myself a demerit related to remote learning. But first, this break.
You know, Elizabeth, it's important to me to be a treasure house of happy memories, but sometimes it's hard to frame something that you want to keep. Like I have had pieces of children's art that I really wanted to frame, but it's kind of unconventionally sized and it's hard to do. But Framebridge makes it easy to get anything framed at an affordable price. You can easily order online at framebridge.com or you can visit one of their 20-plus retail stores. Framebridge custom frames your pieces in their studio using the highest quality materials and ships it to your door in days for free.
Gretchen, I realized I didn't have a recent framed photo of you and me and mom and dad, and I really wanted one. So when we were in Kansas City and took a great picture, I uploaded it, sent it to Framebridge, and now I have a beautiful framed photo of us. See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything. That's framebridge.com. Gretch, I know from my own experience that baby making is not always simple. There is a lack of knowledge surrounding how to get pregnant. And when you want to conceive, there can be a lack of understanding and resources. Frida Fertility is the only one-stop shop that makes it easier to make a baby with a set of solutions for everything from reproductive health to ovulation tracking to conception aid.
Frida is simplifying the journey to parenthood with products that help you go from trying to making a baby. Frida products are innovative, easy to use, and accessible, from ovulation prediction to at-home insemination kits. This is baby making simplified. Find Frida Fertility on Amazon, at Target, and select CVS stores near you. That's Frida Fertility, F-R-I-D-A, Frida Fertility. Okay, and now it is time for Demerits and Gold Stars. And Elizabeth, this is an even-numbered episode, which means that it's your turn to offer a demerit.
My demerit is related to remote learning this week.
Oh, okay. The source of so many demerits for so many of us.
I know, right? So Jack's school is remote learning for the foreseeable future.
So is Eleanor's, yeah.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. But they send various notices of things happening. So it might be like, oh, on Friday is spirit day, wear yellow. or it might be that you have to drive to school at a certain time to pick up supplies,
mm-hmm.
or it just might be there's a Zoom PTA meeting, you know, Tuesday at 5 o'clock, whatever it is.
Yeah.
For some reason, these things just are not landing in my brain.
Ah.
I'm pretty on top of all that kind of stuff when it comes to school. But I think because it's remote, it just feels very like unreal to me. And I just keep forgetting like every single thing I have to do related to school.
And is it because it's kind of coming through this email and never turning into live action or?
I think so. And it's like normally I when I drop them off, I go in, I see people, we're chatting. Oh, are you going to the PTA meeting? Or, you know, it's just like present.
Yes.
Whereas now school is just, and I see the school every day when I drop him off. So it's on my mind. But now it's just like, he's at the kitchen table for 6 hours.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm dissociated from it in some ways. So, although I do like listening in, I do sometimes listen in and I just love hearing the classes. But so anyway, I just need to like, what I need to obviously do is start putting these things on the calendar, which I'm always resistant to doing because, you know, I've only recently adopted even having a calendar. I used to just remember everything.
Yeah.
But I feel bad because, you know, school is difficult enough right now. He doesn't need me dropping the ball.
Yeah. No, I think it's, using the calendar for all those things makes it so much easier. So it just gets out of your head.
Yeah. On the plus side, like I forgot a spirit day and he was supposed to wear a certain thing, but then I was just able to, you know, hand him a t-shirt to change.
Ran to the dresser.
Yeah. So it was easy to fix that particular mistake.
That's true.
Okay, Gretch, what is your gold star?
Well, I want to give a gold star to all the people who are working for voting. We mentioned this before, but I feel like now I know more and more people. People are writing postcards. People are making calls. I have friends. You had a friend who was a poll worker. Now, I have a couple of friends who I discovered were poll workers.
Doing the training. Yeah.
Super cool. It's just, this is really important. It's a really important civic value. And it's just, it's exciting to see that people are just, whatever it is. And, you know, we talked about Empower Hour, people using Empower Hour this way. People are just finding all kinds of innovative ways that work with themselves, their schedule, whatever, their skills. I have a friend who's like doing digital marketing and stuff. It's
text
just great.
Banking is the new thing. Yeah, oh, yeah. A lot of text banking.
Yeah. Yeah. So gold star to everyone and for everyone who's figured out their voting plan. We are entering into the zone. So gold star for everyone. And the resources for this week. I have this brand new thing that is super cool. Speaking of sort of texting and SMSing, you can join my brand new Outer Order Inner Calm 30-day SMS challenge. You get daily text messages with an audio message from me that gives you a simple challenge to create more outer order in your home. This is like something that you can do right away that day.
Ooh.
And a bunch of people helped me beta test this, and 92% they said they would recommend it to a friend.
Nice.
It is only available now in the US and Canada, but we are working on trying to make it available internationally. That's just like a technical issue. So go to GretchenRubin.com/SMS, or I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to check that out. It's really fun. And if you want to know when I'm doing a giveaway or one of my ebooks is on sale or something like that, join my email newsletter at GretchenRubin.com/newsletter. Of course, that is free. And that is it for this episode of Happier. Remember, try this at home. Imitate a spiritual master. Let us know if you tried it and if it worked for you, and what spiritual master did you choose and why? We are so interested to know.
Thanks to our terrific guest, Glennon Doyle. Read her new memoir, Untamed. Thanks to our executive producer, Chuck Reed, our engineer, Bob Tabador, and everyone at Cadence 13. Get in touch. Gretchen's on Instagram at Gretchen Rubin, and I'm at Liz Craft. Our email address is podcast@GretchenRubin.com.
And here it comes. You know what I'm going to say. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend and subscribe to us. Rate, review us wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Craft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward. So, Elizabeth, how's your trip to the desert going?
It's good, but you're lucky I made it on time this morning because I got up, put on my robe, went out to get coffee, and I locked myself out of the room and I had forgotten a mask. So I was like wandering the property, trying to cover my face, searching for someone to let me in my room, like, and again, chicken with the head cut off, you know, whoever I encountered, I'm like, I have a meeting to get to. I have to get in my room and I have to have coffee. So I was like not the Zen person that is expected to be at the oasis in the desert. But, you know, I need to.
But you made it.
Yeah. Yeah, I made it.
From the Onward Project.
I don't know about you, but I'm always looking for ways for my son to get involved and give back in our local community. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Student Visionaries of the Year, a campaign by Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, the largest nonprofit organization dedicated to creating a world without blood cancers.
Student Visionaries of the Year is a 7-week philanthropic leadership development program for high school students. Participants form strong teams and fundraise in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor in their local community. This program is transformative. It not only helps students develop valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship, not to mention it looks great on college applications, but most importantly, is also a chance for them to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on blood cancer patients and their families. You can learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or even nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students.